This is File 11, Cycle 3. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is November 27th, 2017. I am interviewing Father David Sillery of St. John's Episcopal Church in Salisbury, Connecticut. He's going to talk about his church, his career path, and anything else that tickles his fancy. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information.
What is your name?
David Sillery.
And when were you born?
March 6, 1966.
And where were you born?
In Norwood, Massachusetts.
And your parents' names?
Priscilla Barton Sillery, Stephen Edward Sillery, Sr.
Is Stephen with a PH?
Correct.
And do you have siblings?
I have two siblings. I'm the eldest of three. I have a sister, Amy Elizabeth Sillery, and my brother, Stephen Edward Sillery, Jr.
Where did you get your seminary training?
Immediately following attending the University of Connecticut, I went to the General Theological Seminary right in the heart of Chelsea Square in New York.
And when did you either be graduated or ordained?
Well, I graduated first in May of 1992, and I was ordained to the diaconate by the bishop, then Bishop of Connecticut, Bishop Walmsley, at the cathedral in Hartford in 1992, and I was made a priest that following January.
And how do you spell the bishop's last name?
W-A-L-M-S-L-E-Y. Right Reverend Arthur Walmsley.
Thank you.
Who just died.
Why did you choose to become a priest?
That's a great question. I think I was drawn to working with people, helping people. Both my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, my mother were teachers. My mother is currently serves in nursing. My sister's a nurse. So I think sort of just drawn to helping professions. I was part of a very active church youth group in Darien, where I grew up. And one summer, when I had just finished high school, one of the local pastors asked me if I would consider being a summer intern, helping organize trips for kids, leading Bible studies, sort of helping with some of the programmatic aspects of the youth group. It was a very large church. In fact, I think it was one of the largest Presbyterian churches in the Northeast at the time, Narotan Presbyterian Church. And so I said it sounded great. And so we led lots of trips to Ocean City with sort of a middle school group of kids for a week, senior high kids the following week, college kids the following week. So we did a whole bunch of different things. And actually, a very sort of tragic thing happened in the midst of that sort of idyllic summer. There was a boy who was several classes below me in high school who I knew, and I knew his siblings, and he had contracted a very, very rare blood disease and was taken to Yale New Haven, where he eventually died.
Oh, dear.
And sort of over the course of his treatment, the pastor that I was working with, Mark Orr, asked if I would like to go with him to make this thing called a pastoral call, which I didn't really know what that was all about. And so we drove up, and I remember him walking into the room. He was, the pastor was incredibly passionate and full of compassion in terms of talking with the boy. The child, not, I would just sort of have thought about this for years and years, that he didn't talk down to him, he didn't give him sort of these pious platitudes.
Good.
But he was like really there in the moment, and I think that made a huge impact on me as a young person.
It would.
Sort of see all of this and reflect on it, you know, years, decades later. The boy subsequently died. I can remember being in the room. We did multiple visits before he eventually died, where the pastor was praying with the boy, praying with his family, praying with the staff. Just a very
comforting
presence there. He did the funeral for the boy. We visited his parents and siblings at home following.
Oh, good.
You know, and this is like 30 plus years ago, at a time where that pastor was invited into the school system. There were sort of opportunities for him to speak to children in the school district who knew him, maybe not churchgoers, but just to sort of talk about this as a place to find, you know, some, you know, to deal with the grief just on a sort of a communal level. Then there was sort of the aspect within our wider youth group at the time. We got together with some other churches because other kids and other youth groups knew this child. So there's like this huge intersection that, that this pastor, priest, Mark Orr was not just sort of, you know, dealing just with this child, but
the wider community.
And I think that was a really a monumental piece for me that I think of years and years later in terms of my own interest, and we'll get to that when we talk about St. John's, but my interest in the wider community and not just, you know...
Not your own little niche.
Our own little niche. So that was sort of a big piece of it. I mean, throughout the summer...
And he sounds like a very rare pastor.
Huge. I mean, then I saw him, he baptized a child, he did a wedding, and I thought, wow, here he is
doing,
you know, all of these phases in life and with families, the young and the old, and making a very positive and significant impact, not only in the sort of, you know, hearts and minds of his parish members, but beyond into the whole wider community.
Well, that's what a pastor should do.
Yeah,
I think.
I thought it was very powerful for me. So it kind of began a journey. I ended up the following summer working at my home parish, doing the same thing, and kind of filled in some other skills and followed our priest pastor around, and really then began to think about you know, a vocation, what that might be what that might look like, and then eventually, you know. Began a track. I went to University of Connecticut and helped out the priest at the chapel and stores.
Yeah.
At the Episcopal Chapel there.
Yeah, there is.
You know, began, was asked to sort of lead weekday services, so whether that's morning prayer or evening prayer, and help out on Sunday Eucharist, or help with sort of a weekly Bible study. Ended up graduating.
Here you are.
And going right to seminary for 3 years.
Then you really did have a calling from early on.
I think so. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Some of the clergy that I have interviewed, it came to them later in life. But it's always interesting to see the career paths that we follow.
I've never had this sort of road to Damascus experience, but it's, you know, something that's been constantly unfolding.
Well, your time may come. When did you come to St. John's?
For the first time, or
what? Oh, you're good. All right, let's go for the first time.
Well, I was approached, I want to say, I think it was March in 2014. Marion Schweikert, our current senior warden, had called me about the possibility of serving as an interim.
Ah, yes.
After my predecessor, John Carter, had retired after about 18 years. And at that point, my wife Jane and I were living on the South Shore of Long Island. And I was sort of thinking about what our future might look like. And I said to Marion, you know, thank you so much, but I'm really looking for a much longer time horizon than sort of a 12 or 18 month interim. Mm-hmm. And she thanked me, and lo and behold, she ended up calling me back and said, well, we've rethought it, and we're interviewing now for a priest in charge. Would you be interested? I said, absolutely. So I drove up, I think it was like two Sundays before Palm Sunday that year, and I drove up, you know, through the hutch, 684 to 22. And I got up towards Trinity School and just thought, where is this place? It's an hour
way,
more.
Way out.
Way up. And I got here and I pulled into the parking lot to what I now know as Laban's.
Yeah.
And kind of walked around the village on a Saturday morning. And there really was no signs of life. And I think it was at 9 o'clock or something. And Marion met me at the front of the church and walked me in through the nave and showed me around. And we went downstairs to the lower parish hall where I met with all of the vestry members that are presently on the vestry. And they asked me a bunch of questions, and we talked about sort of hopes and dreams for the future, and went home and said, gee, I'm really excited about this possibility. And when I got home, Jane asked me about it, and I said, well, it was great. And she said, you know, what was the village like? And I said, well, it kind of was like that village in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Okay.
I didn't see any children. Anything. And, you know, now that we're here, I know that's not true, but that was sort of my
first impression. Always is very, very quiet, very sleepy.
Yeah.
And then when you get involved in the community, it's very lively.
It's very lively, very lively.
More lively, you know, perhaps, than you'd expect.
It's a lot. I mean, it's fabulous. My kids love it. And as you know, Jane,
it's a very special place.
Yeah,
it's a very special place. It doesn't look so necessarily as you're going through town, but
it looks like a sleepy little
place. Yeah, it does.
It's great.
It truly isn't. It truly isn't.
It's a fabulous place.
So you've been here for about, what, 3 years?
3.5 years. I came, and my first Sunday was the very end of July, and I officially started August 1st. Of 2014.
Okay. And you have a mission for St. John's, using Matthew in the Philippians, I think.
We came up with sort of the idea of praising God and serving neighbor is really, I think, our focus. And I think that speaks to sort of what we do week by week. We gather, we celebrate the Eucharist, we're fed with word and sacrament, we gather around the altar, we, you know, pray for one another. We've also, during my tenure, we pray every service for Salisbury Ambulance, we pray for Lakeville Hose, we pray for our resident trooper, Officer Sorrell, Salisbury Family Services, and Visiting Nurses of Salisbury. And so I think that picks up the serving neighbor piece.
Definitely.
In terms of reaching out beyond our doors.
And that covers most of the volunteer services that work for families.
Mm-hmm.
I've done oral histories on all of them. What's the size of your congregation?
Presently, we have what is known as an average Sunday attendance.
I found out about that when I did Heidi at Trinity. Uh-huh. I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Our
okay.
ASA
yep.
Is about 66 people.
Is that total, or is it combining the 8 o'clock and the 10 o'clock?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you do have two services.
We have two services. We have an 8 o'clock, which is a right one, a sort of simple said service.
Mm-hmm.
I like to tell people you can come and talk like an Elizabethan at 8 o'clock if you like. And then we do what is known as sort of a more of a choral service with music in more of a you know, modern rite.
Oh, you've got a gamut there. From the Elizabethan to the modern. Mm-hmm. Not bad. Mm-hmm. Do you have a Sunday school presently?
Presently, we do not.
And do you have a youth group at this time?
Presently, we do not. Although I have been in touch last year. I was in touch with Lisa Carter, who was very, very supportive, and I'm working with some other people presently about two kind of initiatives. One is a teen cafe. We started 2 years ago on Mondays, a Wi-Fi internet cafe coffee house, which meets Mondays 9 to 11:30, and was envisioned, as a sort of a place that community members could just gather, have coffee, play some games, do chess, checkers, talk, read the papers, hang out. Huge ministry to folks on the trail, and it was also envisioned at a time when the library was closed.
Yeah.
And Sweet Williams at that time was close, so that there was no coffee in the village.
There wasn't any place to just come and have a cup of coffee and just
or
hang
gather.
Out.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, now there's provisions and other things. That's sort of what we had originally thought of. So one of our thoughts is morphing the cafe into a possibility of afternoon hours. If people need internet or a place maybe to do homework or, again, gather when the library's closed, for whatever that might be, as well as a teen cafe, perhaps on a Friday night or a Saturday night once a month, where we might open up the whole building for kids to gather in a safe,
environment.
Drug-free environment to play, you know, whether it's video games, board games, you know,
just
a bunch of things. But again, opening our doors beyond just our current membership and trying to decide what is something that we could offer that the wider community, the wider village might need or want and value.
How is the church structured? You have a vestry.
Mm-hmm.
And how many are on the vestry?
12.
And do they oversee the church?
They oversee sort of, we would say, the temporal or business affairs of the church, and they are elected from our membership to serve a set term. We also have sort of, we might say, co-presidents. We call them a warden and junior warden.
Okay.
Marion Schweikert is our present senior warden, and Mika Armstrong is our junior warden. Sherry Cortese serves as our treasurer. Together with our wardens, treasurer, and priest, that forms our executive committee. And we meet monthly to set the agenda, review our finances together with our finance team, and prepare whatever meeting materials are needed for our monthly meetings.
Do you have a separate committee for buildings and grounds?
Mika Armstrong, our junior warden, handles the buildings and grounds and calls together an adjunct committee as needed. Presently, we're dealing with the steeple, which has been removed, and we have decided that we will not be putting it back up. So there's a current sort of adjunct committee which is looking at putting together a 3 to 5 year plan with respect to any capital improvements that we might need around the building.
Okay. How about hospitality? Do you have a hospitality committee?
We have a very active hospitality committee that is chaired by Leslie Allen. And they do lots of things. Probably
is it Allen with a Y or with an E or
why?
Why? Always ask for spelling.
Yes.
And what do they do after funeral services? Do you have a coffee hour?
We have hospitality every Sunday, and we ask individual members to sign up. So there's a calendar on the table behind you.
thank you.
We ask people to sign up, and so we have hospitality every week, except for major sort of feast days, Christmas and Easter and things like that. We don't. And so the hospitality committee will come together to assist if there's a reception after a funeral or major parish celebrations. We do an annual Christmas party after our lessons and carols service. We also have joined with Lakeville Methodist Church. So during my tenure, I think this will be our fourth season. We go to them for Shrove Tuesday pancake supper, and they come to us for St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we do some joint things together.
And, you do a lot of joint things.
Both of our committees together to kind of work again with the whole community aspect.
Do you do a Christmas pageant? Probably not, because right now you don't have a Sunday school.
We do.
Oh, you do?
We do.
You use adults?
No, I came up with a kind of interesting plan a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. Since we did not have any children other than my own children and a few other kids visiting at holiday times to do our own pageant or even a tableau, I came up with the idea of a pop-up pageant at Noble Horizons.
Nifty.
And I asked all of the other clergy if they would participate, to which they said yes. And I even spoke with Lisa Carter, our then principal at Salisbury Central School, who was very excited about it as, again, a community offering.
Yeah.
So we bill it as the Children of the Village of Salisbury's pop-up pageant for our friends at Noble Horizons.
What a lovely idea. Oh, what a lovely idea.
This year it's morphing into an epiphany pageant because we didn't get a suitable date, but it's really an invitation for all the children of the village, irrespective of religious affiliation or background, to
come
and join us. There's no rehearsal or anything. Pop-up pageant, and we gather in one of the
halos
rooms.
And wings.
Exactly. I think we gather in the library at Noble, and then we go up into the chapel, and they love it.
Oh, that's beautiful. I did many, many Christmas pageants.
But again, it's the community.
It's simple.
Focus.
But it's simple. It's a one-off. Wonderful idea. You do many, many outreach programs, and you partner with several. You partner with Family Services. You do the 12 Moons Coffee House. What's the purpose of that one?
12 Moons Coffee House, we pretty much just provide them space.
Okay.
And essentially they invite entertainers from all around the region once a month, and they do sort of an old-style coffee house where they have different people who play banjo, guitar, ukulele, a whole host of things. And they also, the great thing about it is there is sort of an open mic session. So they invite community people who want to try on something, whether it's a poem or a skit or whatever, particularly a safe place for children to try performing.
And you said something about Linda Myers with the Hispanic...
Louise Lindemeyer does Hispaniola Health Partners, and she's been doing that for a number of years, and she brings services particularly to women in Haiti.
And that's based in Haiti?
Well, she has a sort of a medical clinic there that she's raised funding for, and she parlays sort of help from folks stateside to go down there and do sort of medical mission trips with her.
Food pantry? You contribute, obviously.
We contribute dollars as well as there is a shopping cart in the narthex where we collect food for the corner pantry, formerly Al's
Kitchen. Oh, yes, kitchen. That was a political thing.
And we also have a bin where we collect items for Patrice McGrath's
Family Services.
She has sort of an emergency pantry.
Yep.
So we collect items for that.
What do you do for the Fall Festival?
What don't we do?
I know.
We That's under consideration for successive years. Historically,
it's been going since 57. Books?
Books. They've done pancakes. We've done Attic Treasures.
Yep.
I believe they did cheese and other things in past years.
Yep.
We introduced something kind of new the last couple of years where we had, I think the term is gently used
yes.
Women's and men's clothing, which kind of was a huge hit. We just didn't have the staffing for that this year. And we also moved our Attic Treasures from the upper parish hall into the nave of the church 2 years ago, and that seemed to be a big, big hit for people.
It would be. Tell me about your weekly video that you do with Michael Flint.
Thanks. I do that for public broadcasting, so I got to know Michael a couple of years ago, and originally I used to go up to the studio in Canaan and do that, and we decided it was better to do on location. So we film it every week in the nave here at the church. I've been writing for many years sort of a, I guess it's sort of a primer on the upcoming lessons. So I have a distribution on my website, blog, and then an e-news push-out, probably in excess of 30,000 folks worldwide.
Good Lord.
Who get it?
That's the wider community, all right.
A lot of clergy read it as a sort of a primer for Sunday. And through Michael now, he does a video of it, and then he strips the sound, and it's also on Robinhood radio, and then it's also available on my website. And I've also had a denomination in the Midwest that their big ministry is shortwave radio, and it is aired, if you can believe it, in New Zealand, in Oceania, Friday mornings at 5:15 a.m.
Oh, for the early birds.
For the early birds.
Okay. How about podcasts?
Well, I do.
That's all part of that,
too. That's all part of that. I do a, you know, so there's an audio and a video podcast every week.
Do you do a streaming of your own service?
We do. Michael has helped us. We do 24/7 live stream from the church. So we live stream our services, and I've also recorded prayers that are available throughout the day, prayers for the military, prayer for the morning, midday, sort of afternoon or evening. And then he also airs the weekly sort of message in an audio format on our live stream.
And during the summer, you do a Baroque music program.
We host the Northwest Music Association, who does their Baroque concert series. And we've been doing that, hosting them for about 10 years.
But you wouldn't remember the chamber music at St. John's that was going in the 80s.
No, I wish.
Oh, that was wonderful. We would have quartets come up from the New York Philharmonics. And my husband was very much involved in that, so naturally. Good wife. Do you have any involvement with the Syrian family that was brought into this area?
We do.
Okay.
St. John's ended up being sort of a major center for that project. We like again, everyone in the community, I don't think any one religious community or individual can claim that they were the sole person involved. You had, you know, what is it? Takes a village.
It does.
Really did. And everyone came out and supported them, from finding housing to beds to furniture to clothing to whatever.
Wonderful.
I ended up getting involved initially. Heidi Truex at Trinity Church Lime Rock had a notice in her weekly notices asking for volunteers to come help set up furniture. And I said, okay. So I met her there, and we started assembling furniture and learned more of the project and, you know, finally got involved. So I'm on the committee, and St. John's now manages a small account where people contribute to the ongoing needs of the family. So that's administered here at St. John's. So whenever the committee needs a payment, whether that's for a medical appointment or whatever, we process that check. More importantly, St. John's for the past year served as the hub for the ESOL training, and that took place throughout the week all last year in the lower parish hall. So,
what is ESOL training?
Really, so that they could learn English.
Ah.
So Catherine Perry is a trained ESOL. I think many people know it as ESL, English as a Second Language.
Okay.
I think the acronym is English Second or Other Language.
Alrighty.
So we had training with Mahmoud and Alia, the parents, so that they would work on their English. We also had a number of families from Hotchkiss, who were from Asia and other places who wanted to learn English, or we had some folks who spoke Spanish and wanted to learn English. So they gathered with us during the day, and then in the evening, there was all of their seven all the Syrian families, seven children and parents were here doing lots of other projects.
And they would learn English in the school, but this is more of a formalized project.
Correct. It's also part of their IRIS mandate that they have so many instructional hours.
Because the children that I had that didn't speak English were just thrown in at the deep end.
Correct.
And yes, it was hard for the kids. It was even harder for the parents. Is there anything about the church that I haven't covered before we go on to hopes and wishes?
About St. John's?
Or your pastoral career?
I can't think of anything. I mean, probably... I think I came here with a sort of a distinct call for initially a term of 3 years following John Carter. So our diocese uses that as an intentional time to work on some specific goals. And I think one of those goals was really sort of looking at our finances, looking at our hopes and dreams as a parish community. Looking at ways in which we might connect those goals with our current membership as well as reach out beyond our doors. So we certainly have done a lot of that. I think we've also realized that we need to live into sort of a new reality with respect to our finances. So that there have been, some significant changes. We no longer have a parish administrator. We no longer have a sexton. We've done a lot of sort of radical changes. So now you have a priest in charge, and we have a very, very part-time bookkeeper, and we have someone who sort of cleans the interior of the church, and we've subcontracted out for sort of our landscaping, snow removal, and things like that. But we're really trying to, I think, do a lot more
outsourcing.
With less. No, we're outsourcing, but I think we're doing a lot more
with
less, and we're working smarter, and we've harnessed technology to help us do that.
Yeah, I gathered that. Do you rotate? I mean, do you stay as long as the congregation chooses you to stay? Do you stay as long as the bishop chooses you to stay?
We're like baseball players.
Okay.
We're under contract. We can be traded.
Okay. That answers the question. Is there a term that you are a baseball player before you're traded?
Well, presently, I'm on a three-year contract that was extended for another year, and that's part of our final work is to sort of think about, is St. John's sustainable and viable for a full-time person, or like Trinity, do they need to work towards
half-time.
Another three-quarter time or quarter time position or something therein. I mean, the challenge is...
There's a lot of challenges with that.
In all of Litchfield County, I'm one of three full-time priests.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that makes sense.
The only other two, one is in Litchfield and in Kent.
The Diocese of St. Mary's has merged. The Methodist Church has two churches, mm-hmm. which is, each has its own specific challenges. What are your hopes for the future?
I think we're open to sort of what might come next. I'd say my children and Jane and I have fallen in love with Salisbury.
Yes.
I'm very active. I serve on the ambulance. Mm-hmm.
And you're an active participant. You're not just the chaplain.
I'm on the schedule. I'm an active participant.
What's your day?
I'm on usually Tuesdays, and I fill in Thursday nights with folks. And I'd say I've met a lot of really wonderful people that I enjoy as friends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, beyond just my parochial duties.
Are you chaplain for the host company?
Yes.
Okay. And you meet an awful lot of the same people.
Yeah.
They do both.
They do
both. And the training is phenomenal for either mm-hmm. one of those services.
It's huge. It's huge. I'm actually just finishing up my EMT. I finished the EMT training. I just have to take the national state test.
And they keep changing it. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Anything else? Cover all the areas you want.